Welcome to the Big Squid RC Podcast. This is episode number 2. My name is Tim. Thanks for joining me on this journey into the world of RC. I'm really excited for tonight's show. We have a great guest lined up. It is Patrick Del Castillo from Castle Creations. If you are a basher, if you're a racer, if you are a rock crawler, chances are you've heard of Castle Creations, and chances are even greater that you might actually have one of their products in your vehicle right now. During our chat, Patrick shared a number of really interesting insights into Castle Creations, how he got started in the hobby, how he got started with Castle Creations, and kind of where they're going down the road. You know, what kind of technology they're looking for, where they see the future of ESCs and brushless motors and brushless technology. It's really interesting stuff, and I can't wait to share it with you. So, without further ado, let's get to our conversation with Patrick. Joining me today on the Big Squid RC Podcast is Patrick Del Castillo from Castle Creations. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me, Tim. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. So, Patrick, you are the owner of Castle Creations, and there are, I'm guessing, a number of RC fanatics out there that have your products in their vehicles right now, or they are, you know, ordering them as we speak. Taking a step or two back, what got you into the RC hobby? And did you start out as a hobbyist and an enthusiast?
Absolutely. Yeah. I started in the RC hobby industry. Really, it was the Toledo show that got me hooked. I lived in Toledo, Ohio, and they have the largest RC airplane show in the world in Toledo. And my dad and I were sitting watching TV. I think I was about 12 years old. And saw a commercial for the Toledo show. So next day we drove up to the sports arena and went through the show, and I've been hooked ever since then.
Very cool. So after you were involved as a hobbyist, you know, how long did it take you to get from being a hobbyist to being in the industry as a player?
Well, it took quite a while. I didn't start Castle Creations until I was 30 years old.
Okay.
So I had, you know, I spent did a tour in the Air Force, went overseas, got back involved in RC while I was living in Germany. And in Germany, they were flying electrics because a lot of the local clubs weren't allowed to fly gas because of the noise restrictions. And so I got interested in flying electric airplanes while I lived in Germany. And when I came back to the U.S., there just wasn't anybody doing that in the U.S.
Okay.
So, yeah. So one of the things that I like to do was go out and fly during my lunch hour. And that's kind of hard to do with a glow-powered airplane. And so I decided to take my electrics out there. And then I got a little after that, I got involved in building some of my own electronics. And that just sort of stemmed out into, you know, I offered some people speed controllers online for electric airplanes, which was just starting to get a little bit of traction here in the U.S. around then. And before I knew it, in the first month, I had sold 300 of them. And so I was thinking, wow, this is great.
Yeah, I'll say, holy cow.
Yeah, I thought, you know, someday I'll be able to pay off a credit card or two, you know, make a little bit of extra money. And that's basically how Castle got started. At the time, I was working at Honeywell as an avionics engineer.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So since you've been involved with Castle and when you were just getting started, how big for you and how big for Castle was hitting the trade shows and getting in front of hobbyists and getting in front of other vendors and folks like that?
Oh, yeah. In the early days, that was everything. You know, when you're a small company, you don't have a lot of exposure. You don't have a lot of money to spend on advertising or, you know, sponsoring drivers or sponsoring events or things like that. So trade shows were huge. It's a little different today.
I'm guessing that the internet plays a big part of them in that.
Yeah, I think today that's exactly right. Internet, social media is, you know, for a new company, for an up and coming company. That is definitely the way to get the word out today. Trade shows are still important, but they're not nearly the, you know, they don't carry the weight they used to I started CAFL almost 20 years ago, so the internet was really in its infancy then.
Yeah, I agree. The trade shows and just getting FaceTime with people, I think that's probably the biggest thing, just being able to get out and meet people.
Yeah.
But with the reach that we have now online through social media, any form of social media, far exceeds what you could accomplish at a trade show. Not that they're not still important to what you were saying, but times have changed, and the hobby has changed along with it. So it's all just interesting to see how things have evolved over time.
It is very interesting. I used to, pack up a duffel bag and go to trade shows almost every weekend, either trade shows or fly-ins or car events. Now we probably hit 7 to 10 major events during the year, with actual CAFL personnel. But we have sponsored drivers and, sponsored personnel who represent CAFL at a lot of the smaller events.
When you were getting started, how many events would you hit, just to compare?
Probably 20 a year.
Okay. Wow. That's
a year. Yeah.
That's quite the change.
Mm-hmm.
That is quite the change. So the world that we're in now, the RC world that we're in now, electric is the way to go, it seems, for RC vehicles, specifically surface vehicles, and brushless powered vehicles are king of the hill, the 800-pound gorilla, whatever you want to call them. They are, they are the power to have. Why do you think that other brushless companies such as Novak and LRP, why do you think they are struggling in this world of brushless power?
That's a good question. A lot of it is, just the economic reality of it. The Chinese can build ESCs and motors a lot cheaper than, for example, CAFL or LRP or Novak can build them in the U.S. Our research and development costs are a lot higher. And so it's, that makes the environment really challenging. You have to be really, really innovative and, constantly evolving your product to stay ahead in the game, simply because we have to charge more because our costs are significantly higher. So we have to be better.
Yeah. It all comes down to competition, basically, no matter where your competition may be coming from.
Right. And the RC market is shrinking somewhat. We've seen that over the last 20 years. A lot of it's, the graying of people who grew up with RC. And some of it's, competition with other things, video game and things like that. So we're the companies that are there are fighting over a somewhat shrinking audience.
That's been the biggest puzzler for me, too, I guess I'm a relative newbie in the world of RC. I've always wanted to get into the hobby from an early age, but within the last 6 years, that's really where I've immersed myself in it. And it just blows my mind because I have so much fun with these things. And and maybe I'm just living out, extending my childhood a little bit, but then I see my kids and I cannot pry them away from their iPads and their Xbox with a stick of dynamite. It's like, come and experience this thing that you can actually play around with and build and crash and flip and just do amazing things with and get outside. And I just can't seem to crack that force field that those other electronic devices have created.
Yeah, it is a difficult situation for the modeling. I don't think modeling will ever die. That's, yeah. There are people who just, it's part of their psyche. They want to know how things work. They want to put things together. They want to take them apart. They want to make them better and faster. That's just, part of what they find to be fun and interesting. But yeah, there's a lot of competition for people's attention and time nowadays.
Yeah. I think every industry, entertainment industry, is seeing that as well. You're seeing sporting event attendance decline. Television ratings are going down. It's not just RC, but it seems like we're feeling it a lot more because we're immersed in it when it's what we're passionate about.
Right. Yep, I agree.
So back when CAFL was starting out and you were getting things rolling, you were all about non-censored motors. recently you've shifted to censored. Why? What was the root for that shift? And you know, do you see any other technology changes on the horizon that may be worth looking at?
Well, honestly, Tim, censorless is actually in 99% of the cases, censorless is superior to censored. And the reason is that the ESC is determining the timing based on the real-time position of the magnets, not based on what a sensor is telling it. So it can optimize the timing on the fly for the motor. That's why we've really, you know, not pushed into a sensor only arrangement, or you know, sensor only software.
Okay.
What we're doing is a hybrid. So it uses the sensors when the sensors are advantageous. For example, when the motor is still, a really good application for censored is rock crawling.
Okay.
And rock crawling, the motors are moving forward and backward, and that can confuse a sensorless algorithm. It's very difficult to tune a sensorless algorithm to really do a very good job at rock crawling. I say that, but really our new Sidewinder 4 is sensorless, and it does an amazing job with rock crawling. but, you know, for someone who's doing it professionally or someone who's raced, you know, doing it competitively, the sensors give absolutely no possibility of error in starting the motor. No jitter, no stutter, no possibility for error. So really it was rock crawling that kind of pushed us in doing the censored version. But, you know, there are a lot of people who like the censored feel, the way that it feels coming off the starting line, because it does have more authority than a sensorless system, especially if you've got a lot of hookup, a lot of torque on the wheels at start. If they don't break free, sensorless is great. If they break free, the sensorless has got, you know, is very, very quick to you know, pick up the position of the motor and run it really, really well. But if you want to be able to crawl off the line, or you want to be able to stage a dragster, or if you want to be able to, you know, get a really good hookup off the line with no stutter, that's where the sensors really come in handy. It's generating torque at very, very low RPMs where the sensors shine.
Interesting. I learned something. I've had, you know, some experience with brushless, a lot more experience with brushed motors. My personal taste tends to veer toward the crawling scene. So I've got a lot of, you know, brushed, you know, really low cost can motors laying around, and a lot in my rigs right now. But looking at, I think I will personally have to start looking at a censored brushless motor. But looking at, you know, what areas of RC are hot right now, and crawling is definitely one of the biggest areas. What do you think the next big thing may be with motor tech with regards to crawling?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. I think more than motor tech is going to be software tech. The software that's actually resides in the controller and drives the motor. We've come a long way. Have you had an opportunity to try Mamba X with a sensor motor on a rock crawler?
Not yet.
You'll be real interested to see what it's like. It's very different than crawling with a brush motor, because we have the motor generating torque all the time right now. So even if it's at a standstill and you're not, you know, putting any input on the throttle, it will generate hold torque to prevent the truck from rolling backwards. And you can adjust that hold torque. We have a separate hookup, a separate third channel on your transmitter, you know, run a second channel into the ESC and adjust the amount of hold torque you have. So it gives you an awful lot of flexibility, and actually makes the, you know, some of the rock crawling tasks easier, because the truck will hold torque while you're, you know, while you're doing steering entry or something like that, to move from, you know, one position to another. So you know, that's a big advancement made. But, you know, as far as I think, you know, there's still some room to be done on sensitivity of control.
Okay.
We've come a long way on that from our previous generation products. We used to have about 512 steps of throttle, and we're up to about 2,000 steps of throttle in Mamba X.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it gives you really nice feel on the very, very low end to have, you know, all those, that really fine resolution.
Yeah.
But even, you know, there are some drivers who even can feel those discrete steps. And, you know, there are some instances where you can actually feel, you know, the discrete steps, even with 2,000 steps. So I think finer granularity in the steps of throttle is really, you know, one of the things we're going to be looking at in the future, and improving some of the things like the holding torque. Right now, the holding torque is passive. In other words, it doesn't use any energy from your battery to hold the vehicle in place.
Okay.
It just uses a passive braking on the motor. The next generation, we're going to actually be doing active hold on the motor, and that will give even more torque. Right now, it's amazing how much torque through all the gearing that you get with just active braking. But there is a step beyond that. You know, if you're above about a 60-degree angle or so, in most trucks, it'll still creep backward very, very slowly, even with passive braking, which is what we have today. And active braking will take care of that. It will, however, require a little bit of battery power.
Okay, sure. So you get a trade-off, but you get something that's stuck like glue to.
Exactly.
That might be worth the trade-off. I think that'd be well worth the trade-off.
Yeah, we're looking at implementing that in, you know, sometime later this year. So, you know, if you have a Mamba X, you'll be able to download that new firmware.
The changes that you're looking at making would be able to essentially retrofit via software existing motors.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, we've since the beginning of Castle, we've always had the ability to update software to the newest and greatest software base. So as we add features, you know, you can go online and download that new software off of our website.
Well, that makes the longevity of the motor that much more, I guess, worthwhile investment.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the whole idea, is, you know, we want to future proof the controllers, rather than, you know, coming out with a new one every 6 months, so you have to buy a new controller to get new features. You buy one and you'll be able to update it for years.
Very interesting and unique way to approach it. So in your eyes, the future is with tuning, really, in the software side, and making things more smooth and really just adjustable.
Yeah. That's one part. You know, you were alluding to, you know, changes in the motors themselves.
Yeah.
There are actually some really cool motor technologies that we're working on at Castle right now that, you know, hopefully, you know, we're actually developing these for industrial customers. But that technology will eventually find its way back into RC.
Okay.
One of the things that we're working on is what we call a thin section motor. And these are motors that are very, very high torque. They're very low RPM. And they have very high pole counts. So a motor we're working on right now has 72 poles. So it's, you know, pretty high pole count motor. Now in brush rock crawlers, or the brushless rock crawlers today, they have a lot of gearing, but what we'll be able to do with some of these really high torque motors is eliminate a lot of the gearing and drive the drive shafts directly and still get the kind of smoothness and control that you get today, you know, with and eliminating all of the gear lash and the slop that's introduced by the drivetrain. That's something that we're working on. It's something that's, you know, has some really good applications in industrial. Okay. And it'll be really interesting to see what happens when we bring some of that technology back into the RC side.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see how that what shape that takes when it does, you know, arrive in the hobby. I recently, and maybe it's been a couple of years now, but I've been intrigued by, I think Orion came out with a motor with the ESC contained inside of it.
Yes.
And you've seen these kind of hybrid combo pack mashup electronics. And I thought that those were going to be the next big thing. And really, they haven't gone anywhere, at least from my perspective.
Yeah, there are some limitations to, you know, integrating a motor and controller together. Mainly it's heat, because the motor generates heat and the ESC generates heat. And you put them together, and you just have more heat in a small area. That said, there are lots of applications where that would work well, and rock crawling is one of them. Rock crawlers don't tend to generate the kind of heat that, you know, racing and bashing does. And so I think those will, you know, the integrated motor ESC will find its, you know, itself in rock crawling pretty soon.
Yeah.
The Orion one that you're talking about, I think that was sensorless only.
Okay.
And so that may have made it difficult for them to bar, you know, may have made it difficult for them to get into the rock crawling, you know, scene.
Sure. Sure. But yeah, I remember when that came out, and I was really excited to see how it would be applied to different models and whatnot. And then I think maybe a year later I saw it popped up on my radar again, and then I haven't seen much of it since.
Right.
Which is a little disappointing, because I like to see how things have progressed. And just in the short time I've been in the hobby, things have progressed incredibly far. I said it's been about 6 years. You know, looking forward, how do you see Castle evolving in the products that you create, the brushless motors, the ESCs? How do you see those things 10 years down the road?
10 years down the road, I see, you know, a lot more computing horsepower in the ESCs. ESCs being able to do things that that can't be done today, simply because of lack of computing horsepower. And I'd love to tell your listeners all about it, but I don't want to show my hand. Honestly. And that's I think, you know, one of the most exciting things.
Yeah.
The you know, the cost of computing horsepower is coming way down, and we're able to put a lot more computing horsepower, you know, for very little money into things like ESCs, and as well as things like data communications. I think that's another area that you're going to start seeing. Start seeing real time telemetry. You know, so you're going to see your guys at the track side with their iPads, you know, watching how many G's the cars are taking into the corners, and when the drivers are braking, and very much like in full scale racing today. And so, you know, there's some really neat things on the motor side. Thin section motors, I think, are going to be really big. Ironless motors is really the next step of reducing weight. They're very complicated to build.
Okay.
But the power to weight ratio, you can get double the power to weight ratio with an ironless motor versus a you know, traditional motor. So there's some really neat things that, you know, will be coming in the future. But I can't talk about a lot of them.
Sure. That's understandable. Okay, let's bring things back to present day. Looking at the RC landscape, you have racers, you have bashers, you have crawling, you have drifting. Am I missing anything? I'm sure I am. You could probably do a mish
scale.
Yep. you could do a mix up of a couple different, you know, genres of RC. But it, from Castle's perspective, what is your bread and butter market within the RC world?
Well, right now we're kind of split. We're doing, mostly bashers. But rock crawling is taking over very quickly. We are selling a ton of rock crawling motors, and ESCs. So I sort of see us in the basher and rock crawler world simultaneously.
Do you see that changing at all? And not even 10 years down the road, but like, you know, let's look 2 to 3 years down the road. Do you see, you know, rock crawling maintaining the momentum that it has right now?
Oh, I think so. And I think, you know, crossovers, you know, like rock racing, I think will become really popular as well. And that's an interesting, type of event, because it's very difficult to build a chassis. And, you know, from our perspective, it's difficult to build an ESC that performs well on both, you know, both as a crawling and a racing ESC simultaneously. But because of the difficulty of that, I think that will be very interesting for the kind of people who like to do RC. I see rock racing becoming a big thing.
Yeah. And I told you I'd forget one. And that was one that I should have remembered. It's amazing to me to see how crawling and really scaling has kind of taken off and has just snowballed over the last few years. And now you have, you know, the rock racing thing is starting to gain some steam. You've got monster trucks as a model. They've always been popular. They've always been fun. But I think within the last year to year and a half, you know, they've become more of an entity on, mm-hmm. on the horizon and just the RC landscape. What areas are you surprised in seeing, you know, maybe aren't getting as much attention as you think they should, or that you would anticipate them getting?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think racing's declining in popularity, which, you know, I hate to see that. And I wish we could get more people involved in, you know, just, you know, dirt track and carpet racing and things like that. I hate to see those declining as much as they are. We've never been a racing, you know, a competitive racing focused company, but we do, you know, we do have our, you know, our sponsored drivers and do, you know, you will go to any event and you'll see Mamba X's in a lot of cars. So, I mean, I'm really sad to kind of see the racing area shrinking and declining the way it is.
I was actually thinking about racing today. I've been to a track, but I've not yet set tires on the track. Again, with my personal taste veering more toward crawling, racing has been something it's still out there as an interest for me personally, but there's a lot involved. Even if you just want to get in on a local club level, or just, you know, going to the track and turning a few laps, there's maybe more involved than one might anticipate.
Yeah. That's you know, no kidding. It can take you months to get to the point where you can make, you know, 10 laps without coming off the track when you're the only guy on the track.
Right.
So it's very hard.
And I wonder if that's not part of the decline or the cause of the decline. You know, people are gung-ho about getting into it, and then it's maybe not what they thought it would be.
Yeah. It's possible. I mean, it is a lot of fun, though. Oh, and when you've got a big group of guys who get together and go to the club on, you know, Wednesday nights or Thursday nights, whenever the race is, and they all get together and they race, it's a lot of fun, and it's, you know, it's a really good time. And everybody, you know, it's a nice time to, you know, get to meet everybody and brag about your stuff, and you know, everybody else is bragging about their stuff to you, and you're swapping information and helping other people set up their cars. And it really is, you know, a nice pastime hobby. And it's really sad for me to see it in decline.
With you mentioning rock racing, another form of racing just popped into my head. And I, again, kicking myself for not mentioning this before, but straight line drag racing, that has in some circles become the thing to do. And I've seen it slowly gaining popularity, but it's I think it's got some momentum behind it. Do you think that might be something that will eventually achieve the same popularity as, say, crawling is, or, you know, what off-road racing was back in its heyday?
Yeah, I'd really like to see drag racing take off. We've seen a big uptick in popularity on it too. In fact, we had to revive a version of Mamba Monster because it was a favorite of drag racers, and revive an old version of Software also because there was so much demand for it, and they wouldn't let us off the hook.
Wow.
Yeah, so after Mamba X had come out, we were planning on phasing out Mamba Monster. You know, the Monster X came out, and then we were planning on phasing out Monster 2.
Okay.
But there was a version 1.24 of Mamba Monster 2 software that was like the perfect drag racing software. And it had, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago. It's a version that's 3 or 4 years old. But something about it, it's very, very responsive to the trigger and takes off very, very quickly and smoothly. And the drag racing guys love it. And so because of demand, we had to revive the Mamba Monster 2 and version 1.24 of software. We sell those specifically for drag racing. I'm hopeful. I see a lot of drag racing posts from guys in the West Coast. I think it's a West Coast thing. I haven't seen a lot of East Coast stuff on it, but it's gaining popularity very quickly on the West Coast. And I'd love to see it, you know, become big. It's a lot of fun to watch too.
That's another form of RC and RC racing that I have not personally participated in, but I've seen plenty of videos and know of a number of people that do straight line racing, and there's an appeal to it. I will give them that much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen some motorcycle drag racing on the West Coast as well, with RC motorcycles.
Oh, cool.
Which I thought was very cool. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to shift gears just a little bit. With as much hype as quadcopter FPV racing came in with, oh, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago now, it seems like the hype has really died down quite a bit. And it was being heralded as the next big thing, the next sport of the future. Being involved in the RC industry as you are, and supplying high performance components as you do, do you ever see surface RC getting to that point of where it's a mainstream spectator sport?
Boy, I have to think about that for a minute. I never thought that the drone racing was going to, you know, ever be a really high profile spectator sport. I always kind of assumed it would be sort of a niche sport, and it kind of looks like that's the way it's going to end up. Is kind of a niche sport. I really think that RC car racing, watching RC car racing is a lot more fun. Personally, the drone racing is interesting, but I don't know if I see it becoming a big, you know, anything that's going to, you know, overtake baseball or football, for example.
Drone racing is an acquired taste, and I'm not sure I even have the palate for it. There was one instance where I was actually hooked, and I think it was Disney like a Disney Channel that was broadcasting some races, just how they had things set up. You could identify who was in the lead. You could identify who had crashed, which at one point was all but two guys. It was fun. You know, they I don't want to say gamified it, but they put a gloss over it to make it a little more interesting than maybe it would have been if you're just watching these little things zip around on your screen.
Yeah. I mean, the FPV racers are, I mean, I would much rather, when I watch videos and stuff, I would much rather watch the ones where they're, you know, flying through city streets and going off of balconies and down, you know, over the ocean and stuff like that. Yeah. Those are really some freaking amazing videos. Lots and lots of them online. They really are very cool to watch. But when you're watching racing, in my experience, it's been really hard to follow exactly what's going on. And so maybe that's what's really really needed and really necessary is, you know, to make it so that it's easier to follow where, you know, where people are on the course and be able to track them, because it's really difficult to do watching it as a spectator sport. More power to them. I hope they, you know, you know, figure out a way to turn it into a huge spectator sport. I would really like to see that.
Yeah, and there's something to be said for, you know, not necessarily going mainstream, but staying in a niche market, and just, you know, living that lifestyle, because there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so this question was one that we talked about beforehand, and I'm going to bring it up, because I'm honestly interested in hearing your thoughts on it. With the RC industry being what it is now, and times are a little tough, what advice would you give to someone looking to start up a new company, whether it's, you know, creating the vehicle itself, creating a component for it, or, you know, anything under the umbrella of RC? You've got somebody that loves the hobby and they want to get involved on the industry side. What would you tell them?
I would tell them, keep your expectations low. It really is a market of niche manufacturers. There's not, you're not going to get rich. You have to do it because you love the hobby and, you know, you like making people happy and, you know, bringing them cool stuff that, you know, enhances their hobby. You know, earlier we were talking about that, and I told you, you know, my answer would be, you know, stay away.
Yeah,
that's really, you know, it really is difficult, because, you know, in the environment today, you spend a lot of money innovating, and those innovations are very easy to knock off. And that's a difficult part of this business, is that you come up with something cool and innovative, and then, you know, 3 months later, it's available from, you know, everybody else. And so that, you know, it really makes it difficult. The market's very, very competitive, and there are a lot of players, you know, fighting over a pretty small pie. Right now at Castle, we have 12 engineers full time, all working on software and hardware and new innovations. So it's expensive to run the company. There's a lot of R&D effort involved, it's not a get rich quick thing. You're not going to get rich doing it. You better really love doing it, because you're not going to get rich, and you're going to struggle most of the time.
Yeah. So go into it more for the passion, less for the cash.
Absolutely. I drive a Toyota, and I live in a 3-bedroom, you know, house in the suburbs of Olathe, Kansas. I'm not a rich guy. So,
but you get to do something that you love. So you're rich in that regard.
Yeah. I get to go into work every day and look forward to going into work every day. And I get to work with people who are really, really passionate about what they're doing. And it's funny, even like the production people, you know, who build the ESCs, they're passionate about what they do, because, you know, they get to, you know, we have customer greet day, meet and greet days, and we have the guys are running the cars up and down. You know, the engineers are running cars up and down, and they let the other employees play with them from time to time. And everybody's kind of gotten really gung ho about the hobby at Castle. Even people who come in and have never seen the hobby before, once they've worked there for a while, they really enjoy it, and a lot of them get involved in
it. And it's hard not to, once you've been exposed to it, it's hard not to fall in love with it. Unless you're my kids, which I'm never going to quite understand.
How old are your kids?
Oh boy. They are 5, 9, and 11.
Okay. Well, I have a 16-year-old and a 6-year-old. And the 6-year-old is more interested than the 16-year-old. So, but it's still pretty much, it's not, if it's not, YouTube or, video games, it's not nearly as interesting.
Yeah. If I can get them to go out with me every other weekend, and then that's a small victory in my end.
Yep. Absolutely. It may catch on with them eventually.
I hope so. I hope so.
Good luck.
Well, Patrick, I want to thank you for joining me on this episode of the Big Squid RC Podcast. If folks want to learn more about Castle Creations, what are the best places for them to go?
Our website, definitely, castlecreations.com. And it's just the way it's, sounds. It's Castle Creations with an S. We do both air and surface. So we have a full, full line of ESCs, and pretty much everything you need to know you can find on our website. If not, if there's any questions you have, our tech support guys are here in the U.S. We have full-time tech support guys at Castle Creations, and they can help steer you in the right direction.
Excellent. Well, thank you again very much for your time and all of your great information on your world of RC.
All right. Thanks very much, Tim.
That was a fun conversation. I do want to thank Patrick again for his time and his insight into, not only Castle Creations, which sounds like an amazing place to work, by the way. They have 60 employees. A majority of their products are built and manufactured in the United States. It just sounds like an amazing place to work. But not only sharing his knowledge and his history of Castle Creations, but also where he feels things are going in the hobby when it comes to technology and what technology he feels might be, the next breakthrough thing. Some really interesting stuff and really interesting things to keep an eye on going forward. If you're listening to this show for the first time, thanks for checking us out. If you are listening to episode 2 and you've already listened to episode 1, chances are you're already a subscriber. If you are not a subscriber to the Big Squid RC Podcast, you can subscribe to the show through your favorite podcasting client or app, simply by searching for the Big Squid RC Podcast. Simple as that. Search for Big Squid, and you should find the show. Remember to check out BigSquidRC.com for the latest news about the world of RC, reviews, videos, you name it, you'll find it at BigSquidRC.com. And before we officially wrap up this episode, I do want to invite everybody to an event that Big Squid RC is going to be holding in St. Louis in April. Early April, on April 7th, it is the Big Squid RC St. Louis RC Freaks Mud, Rocks, and Tears Scale Showdown. It is going to be the first scale event that Big Squid is putting together. We're partnering with the folks at St. Louis RC Freaks. It is going to be held at the Crystal City Underground in Crystal City, Missouri, about 30 miles south of St. Louis. Again, the event takes place on April 7th. Registration is from 9 to 11 a.m. The cost is $10 per person. You can bring as many trucks as you want to. You only pay $10 per person. If you have 5 trucks, bring the 5 trucks. If you have 1 truck, bring that. Drive it all day long. Have a blast. We are really excited to be partnering with Horizon Hobby on this. They are the presenting sponsor. You can find additional information on this event at Big Squid RC. Be sure to check it out if you're into scale, if you are into getting together, talking RC with other folks. This is an event to not miss. So until next time, My name is Tim. Thank you for listening to the Big Squid RC Podcast. Keep having fun with the hobby, and we'll catch you guys later.